Hello and welcome to A Writer's Journey. I'm Sarah Whitford and my co-host is Tarrant Zepke. In today's episode, the finale for Season 2, which has been all about publishing, we're going to be talking about how to think like a publisher, or more specifically, five things you need to consider when it comes to publishing your book. So, Tarrant, how about if you just take it away?
Okay. Before we jump in, Sarah, I found some statistics that I thought you especially and our listeners would appreciate here. Okay. Did you know that in 2010, 328,000 books were published, and of those books, 133,000 were self-published?
That was in 2010?
Yeah. Now, the following year, roughly the same number of books were published, 347,000 books. But out of that total, 211,000 of those were self-published.
Oh, wow.
So if you do the math, we're talking about 41% of all books published in 2010 were self-published, as opposed to 61% of all books that were published in 2011 being self-published. So that's a 20% jump in a year.
And I wonder what it would be today, because, I mean, that was just at the beginning of all this stuff.
That's the most recent statistics I could find, but I have wondered, because you know it's exploded last couple of years here. So, you know, we're in the, you know, all about the golden age of piracy. Sarah,
yes,
you're a pirate.
Yes.
So I've found out this has been dubbed the golden age of self-publishing. So that's great. This is big, Sarah. I want to point out some other statistics I found. Less than 10% of self-published authors earn a living from their books. A survey of 1,000 self-published authors found that 50% earned less than $500 from their books in 2011.
Oh, wow.
Now, I know that sounds kind of ominous there, but the good news is that the other 50% earned more than this amount. So what this show is about is all about how you can be successful as a writer and a publisher. And so how do you become part of the latter rather than the former here? So the trick is knowing when you need to stop thinking like an author and start thinking like a publisher. And you have to change hats. You got to look at your writing from a business perspective and rather than creatively. And so that's where we're going to get. We get so invested in our projects. I think we have a hard time pulling back and being analytical and taking a business approach.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what, yes. And you're finding some of this out now as you've had your debut novel out. It can be challenging, can it, wearing all these hats, you know.
There's a lot to learn.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about is pricing. Don't you think this is a big misstep that indie publishers make? Is it pricing?
I definitely do. I definitely think that that's, and we wonder about it because, I mean, who really knows what to price their book at with certainty?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no definite answer, and it's not like you have a big traditional publishing house standing over you saying, it's going to be this price, and that's just the end of it.
Yes, it's wonderful when you're with traditional publishing because they take it all out of your hands. So that you don't know. But when you're doing it yourself, especially on the front end when you haven't had much experience with this, I think it's very hard because if you have a 356-page book that you've spent 2 years working on and all, you think it's worth $21.95. But that really doesn't matter, as you know, Sarah. The
mm-hmm.
question is, what's the marketplace going to accept? Because the market drives the price. It's the only deciding factor, period. Don't you agree, Sarah?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. So it's pretty simple. Once you get past the emotional point of saying, I've invested 2 years in my heart and soul, blood, sweat, and tears into this book, and you step back from it and you say, but what can I get? What's the true value of this book? You need to compare a minimum of 5 similar titles. I recommend looking at 10 similar titles in your genre. And you've got to count all these different variables into place, author notoriety, page count, trim size, all this stuff. And then realize that you cannot command the same price for your fiction work as Stephen King or Harlan Coben or Stephanie Myers. So it doesn't matter if their books are selling at $14.95.
That's right.
Yeah, that's not realistic that you're going to get that. So you have to really be comparable when you're looking at other titles and all. And you can't compare something that may be a 356 page book if your book is 211 pages. Mm-hmm. So you've got to get apples and apples here when you're comparing. So then you've got to keep adjusting the price until you find the sweet spot. And I think that's true whether it's a print book or an e-book.
But wait, Terrence, what about, that's what I was going to say, is were you talking about print or digital books? Because I would agree with you when it comes to the digital books. But for the print books, first of all, if you don't go with, for instance, the ISBN from CreateSpace, and a lot of people don't. A lot of people want to get their own ISBNs, in blocks from Balker or whatever. You set the price, and it's attached to the ISBN. Can you just be changing your price on Amazon.com once you do that?
You can change your price. It's not tied to an ISBN. It's tied to a barcode. If you're buying barcodes as well as ISBNs. That price is fixed. You would have to go in there and physically change, get a different barcode and a different price and all.
Okay. So, I know that when, for instance, and I only know this because I set this one up recently, I know with the Smuggler's Gambit, I did buy a barcode because since I wasn't getting one from Amazon, I didn't know another way to get a barcode, but so I bought one from Balker, but the Balker setup has a place where you put the retail price of your book, if I remember correctly, on the last page of when you're setting up your title on Balker. So I guess you would have to go in there and change it too.
Yeah, I would think. I'm not an expert on that, so I would say that you need to do a little research on that. But I know that regardless of what you set your price at, as you well know, Amazon comes back in there and changes it. So I don't see why you couldn't change it as well as they can.
Okay.
I've seen my books, and I know what they sell for, and I've seen them on Amazon and other places. I'm just using Amazon as an example, where they have changed the price. And maybe it was a 1995 book, but I'm seeing it being sold on there for $17.95. Mm-hmm. Well, if they can change the price, why can't I?
I would guess the only prohibition probably would be is if you do have a price printed on your book, like I do, and that you have that printed as the retail price, but then on Amazon you actually tell Amazon a different price, then any booksellers that are selling your book would probably be very frustrated with the fact that Amazon has the retail price at a lower price than what's on the cover. So I guess that would be the thing that would probably...
Well, Amazon is going to continually frustrate booksellers.
The thing is, they can lower the price in an effort to undersell other booksellers. But I'm just thinking as an author, since we're supposed to be neutral in terms of we don't care who sells our book, right? We just want people to sell the book. I would think that it would be...
In my opinion, I don't believe in going in there and changing the price a lot on print. That's just something, if it's not selling, then maybe you need to evaluate what you've priced it at. But if you've done your research on the front end, then you know what your what the market value is. Mm-hmm. Then maybe you need, if that's all right, then maybe you just need to be doing more promotions at that point, rather than, because you can keep marking the price down and that doesn't mean it's going to sell, right?
Right.
So I think it would be more of a wise maneuver when you change prices on ebooks. And that would be in conjunction to, different campaigns and different things you're doing. But just pricing is something that you have to think about. And so just go into that with a great deal of thought before you put a price on your book and see. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Sarah, whether you do it with Ingram Spark or with CreateSpace, they will tell you what your cost is for the book, correct?
Yes. So that's definitely important, and you definitely want to take that into consideration when you're pricing your book, that you're making a profit. You don't want to, you don't want to owe money when people buy your book because you've not thought out how much it's going to cost per piece. And then Amazon's or CreateSpace is going to take their cut, or Ingram Spark's going to take their cut. So you definitely need to make sure you're making some kind of profit. That's a no-brainer, but do the calculations and think it through and make sure. I know you mentioned earlier that you can't set, you can't expect to get paid the same amount as Stephen King or J.K. Rowling or someone like that for a book. But for print books, one challenge is print books cost a certain amount to publish regardless. And so one thing they have, you know, they can sell a book for $24.95 because they'll release a hardcover right off the bat. You know, and but with the paperbacks, I think there's probably a little bit more of a level playing field just because print, it just costs a certain amount to print things. And, you know, until things go into mass market paperback, at which point they're pretty cheap anyway, cheaper than most, you know, most people can print books through CreateSpace and sell them. You know, your chances are your print book is going to cost, at least for the trade paperback version, it's probably going to cost similar to other books in your genre, even if it is a traditionally published author that's a bestseller. I mean, that just seems, I don't know, that seems to be the case, at least in the genre that my book is in.
Okay. That's good. Okay, well, let's talk about the second thing here. And I'm going to let you run with this, Sarah, because, you know, you're the techie person, and I think that you'll be able to explain this to everybody.
We'll see.
yeah, a bit better than me. This is DRM, Digital Rights Management. And this is something as a publisher, and of course as an author too, you have to concern yourself with. So tell everybody what this is and how this works. Why is this important to us? What should we know about this?
Well, everyone has to make a decision about this when you publish a book digitally online, whether it's through CreateSpace or Smashwords or Nook Press or, you know, whatever method you're using. They always ask you whether or not you want digital rights management applied to the file. Basically, what that means is it means that only the platform and the device on which the item is originally delivered is going to allow that item to be there. For instance, you're not going to be able to take a file off of your Kindle and send it to your friend for her to put on her Kindle without going through Amazon's channels if there's digital rights management. Now, that doesn't mean you can't loan a friend a Kindle book because, you know, for instance, Kindle KDP will let you do that within their parameters that they've set in place. So DRM is supposed to protect the author from the book being pirated is what it comes right down to, and it's not a fail-proof thing. And apparently, and I didn't even know this because this is something I'll admit I've not done a lot of investigating in. I don't know a whole lot about the politics behind it, but apparently this is a pretty hot topic and it's kind of controversial. I know that, for instance, Hugh Howey makes his books available DRM free, and in fact he even has a button on his website that if you've already obtained a copy of his book without paying for it, you can voluntarily pay for it on his site. So I mean, it would be interesting to know how many people, you know, do voluntarily pay for the book. I have no idea how things like that work out, but
it is a hugely controversial issue, and people are well-known authors, publishers, all kinds of people in the industry on both sides on this issue. It's a very hot topic, and I think I had mentioned to you it was a big discussion during BEA this year, Book Expo of America. Mm-hmm. It was a big thing because copyright infringement, as the whole global digital thing, you can imagine, it's getting harder and harder to protect your work. And unfortunately, DRM is falling a bit behind and being able to guarantee the copyright for you. And interestingly enough, do you know one of the big opposers of digital rights management is librarians? They're very much against it and all. And I guess it all has to do with how they have to pay and usage and all for electronic book files.
Well, it's interesting. I saw an article come out today. Actually, I think Jane Friedman sent it out, but it had to do with a new means of being able to get ebooks into libraries' hands. And I would imagine that some of these new ebook platforms specifically for libraries would allow, you know, some means of allowing an ebook to circulate without the same digital rights management that would come through something, say, like Kindle, you know.
It's tough because you can see as a writer, librarians want people just to be able to check it out again and again and again. And as a publisher, as a writer, you want to make money every time someone checks it out. You don't want to pay a one-time. You don't want them paying you a one-time fee. So there's just so much stuff involved with this. And so I'm not claiming to be an expert on any of this, and I don't think you are either.
Oh, no, no, no.
I'm I'm trying to just bring it to your awareness so that you realize how much is involved in the publishing process and what you need to know, look into, make decisions about, be forewarned about, be aware of and all. So that's what we're doing here today. So something I do know about, though, is number three on our list. But I'm going to let Sarah talk about this one, too, because she was so funny when her first book was coming out about the launch date and release date and all. And I knew, Sarah, she had picked a date, and this was when it was going to be released.
Oh, my goodness, you're going to tell on me.
I'm going to tell on you because Sarah, she's just a very, very, very patient person.
I'm very patient about some things, but I'm so impatient about other things.
Yeah, she's really good with computer stuff, technological stuff. She's very patient, whereas I'm not. But when it comes to stuff like, okay, this was the launch date. Well, she had the book ready before the launch date, so that's good. But then it was like a week or two before the launch date, you know, maybe even 3 weeks or something, and she just couldn't sit on it. You know, she just kept fussing, you know, why did I pick this date, you know? And so I want to talk about this because it is important about you only get one time to make a first impression, as they say. You only get one launch date, you know, and so what goes into this? When are you going to launch your book? What are you going to do to get your book noticed? You know, what's your budget? What should you do to launch a book? How important is a launch date? Because Sarah and I have talked about this before where in traditional publishing, there used to be seasons. You released a book in the spring or the fall. And those were the big times and all that. And things are kind of changing. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that in television too. You remember how there used to be the fall, big fall TV season?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now with cable and all these other options, shows are premiering year round. Mm-hmm. And you've seen a lot of new shows in the summertime, and you used to never see new TV shows in the summertime.
Oh, and then you got things like Netflix and Amazon, which will drop an entire series on you at once so that you can binge watch the whole thing.
I know, it took me forever to figure out what binge. I'm like, what is this binge watch? What is that? So you know me, Sarah. But that's kind of the same thing that's happening in the publishing industry is that things are shifting. And so, you know, you can release a book whenever you want now as long as – and there may be a certain time you want to release it because there's a significance. Mm-hmm. For me, I just released Spookiest Battlefields to coincide with the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War. So that was what I knew. Mm-hmm. This was the year to do this book because this is when we were having all these special events at the national parks. This is when there was going to be all this media coverage, a lot of heightened interest in visiting these places and learning about these events and all. So it was very important to me to time it for the travel season this year for that and all. So
I jumped the gun on the Smuggler's Gambit by 5 days. It wasn't as much as you say.
You started talking about doing it.
I think I had set my original release date for March 22nd, and then I ended up releasing it on the 17th because I was like, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to release it today. Yeah. So that's just what I did. And, I mean, I already had the print copies in hand and was able to get those sent out so that the people who pre-ordered print books on my website were able to have those. And so, yeah.
Tell everybody some recommendations you have for what they should do because you can't just put your book out there and go to your sales dashboard or whatever and just watch the numbers grow, right?
Wouldn't that be great if it worked that way? No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, in fact, you know, a lot of people, I remember how I felt before I hit that button to just go ahead and say publish. I wanted to make sure everything was just exactly right. And, you know, the truth of the matter is if it hadn't been, no one would have known because nobody bought it, you know, right away, at least the print version. No one bought the print version right away on Amazon because I had already done pre-orders on my website. And so, you know, the people who knew me, who wanted to pre-order the book, they had already ordered copies that way. So, and I didn't put any real publicity out about the print book on Amazon. And as for the Kindle version, people did pre-order that, and so it delivered the moment it went out. So I had to be a lot more careful about that one. But even that one, I ended up making a couple of tweaks in the file after after it initially came out. But as far as what did you ask me? How did I roll it out, or how did I launch
it?
Yeah,
what were your promotions? What did you do to get the word out? Social media, book reviewers? What did you tell everybody what
well,
you did?
What I did, and I mean, I'm learning as I go, you know. But what I did was, I first of all, as I say, I had Facebook as one form of social media. I had Twitter that I'm active on. And so I had talked about the book a great deal on both of those mediums, and I had talked it up in my community, because really my view was, because of the kind of book it is, because it is historical fiction that is set here in this local area, I thought that, you know, my best shot at getting a strong launch for this book is going to get the people here locally behind it. That's going to be, you know, the thing for me to do. And so I had dozens of pre-orders for the Kindle version. I had, I can't remember exactly how many, but I had close to as many, or if not more, pre-orders for the print book through my website. And people might wonder how I did that. What I did was, I actually went ahead and published the book through CreateSpace, but I did not turn on any of the sales channels. So that way I was able to order a box of books for myself, but it wasn't actually available for sale through any other means until I knew that the people who had pre-ordered it were going to be getting their books. And it was the same thing with CreateSpace. So, so then those books got out very quickly. I had one review up the very first day, but it was someone who had actually been an advanced reader of a proof copy just before it was launched, and so that was my first review. And it didn't take long before the people who had done the pre-orders started leaving reviews, and that helps Goodreads. I started running giveaways right away. I did one giveaway on my website where I offered to give away a free copy of the print, a free signed copy of the print book for people who signed up to be notified about news about the book series and whatnot. I went from a few different angles to launch that first book. I did learn some things, though, from the way I did it. And one is, I am not going to mess with doing another pre-order for the print book like I did this last time.
That's interesting you say that, Sarah, because, you know, I always feel like a pre-order is really only important if you have a established following, if you've got a name, where people are waiting. You know, I have certain authors I follow that I may order their book 6 months before I know it's coming out, just so I don't forget about it. I've placed a pre-order for it. But if you're for lack of a better word, a no-name, you would think logically there really isn't any reason to pre-order. But I'm starting to hear a lot of buzz now about the significance of pre-orders in some place. Smashwords is now offering pre-orders, for instance. And that was something they didn't do before. And they're encouraging you to place them for pre-order because they say they can get it into the pipeline faster and get more time to get people aware of your book and everything before it even comes out.
Well, so this was my experience. The print pre-order thing, like I said, I'm not going to do it again, and the reason why is because it doesn't benefit me as far as Amazon rankings. But that's the exact reason why the Kindle pre-order is, I think, a gem. I think it's a fantastic thing, because with the Kindle pre-order thing, you're racking up a ranking as people are pre-ordering the book. So that's improving your sales ranking. But then on the day that the book actually launches, all of your previous pre-orders hit at once. So you'll have, you know, like a spike then, and then that can give you some momentum for the book to be out in people's eye. Chances are it's going to be, you know, it could possibly be number one in the hot new releases in your genre, or in one or more of your genres, and then that can be just a really good way to sort of build some momentum right off the bat.
Okay. Well, so that brings us here to number four. And this is the biggie here. We're kind of segueing into it anyway, with sales and distribution. How are you going to sell your book? Is it going to be an ebook available only on Amazon? Is it going to be a print book via Ingram Spark? Are you going to just sell it on your website and just, you know, are you going to use a distributor? Are you going to try to sell it to libraries? You need to have a game plan of how you're going to sell your book, where you're going to sell your book, what kind of format you're going to sell your book in. For instance, if you want your ebook sold in libraries, you've got to use Overdrive. That is the outlet for all libraries.
Well,
So.
until today, that new thing that came out today, I can't remember what it's called, and by the time this episode airs, it will be a couple weeks later. But there is something that came out today that I think might be giving Overdrive a run for its money in terms of library distribution.
We'll see, because I found that booksellers and librarians tend to be pretty loyal to what the system they have in place, probably because it's such an ordeal for them to get approval and instigate new systems that require different software, different channels approval or whatever. I found it's very sluggish to change in this industry. So, I mean, I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'm just saying it could be a little while, but we'll see, right? Okay. All right, so what do you recommend? Because you and I have to make a little confession to everybody. I did a book, and this is a pet project of mine. I did a book called Happy Halloween, Hundreds of Perfect Party Recipes, Delightful Decorating Ideas, and Awesome Activities. And I released it as an ebook. And I did it as an ebook only because it has color. You know, when you're talking about recipes and decorations and all, I thought, well, who's going to want that in black and white? And it's not the kind of book that I can afford. I'm not going to make any money if you put it out in color, because who's going to pay $25.95 for this book or whatever it might have to be? So I did it as a little ebook, and Sarah has been dogging me to.
Yes, I have. I sure
See, I'm
have.
telling them myself too here, Sarah. It's not just you, I'm telling them myself,
Good.
because she kept saying, you need to release it. I don't know why you didn't release that as a print book. And I said, well, Sarah, I just don't think it's going to sell well. So I'm going to do all this work and pay this money, and it's not going to sell well. And you say, but you've already done the bulk of the work, and you kept on me. And finally, basically to shut Sarah up and show her. Yeah, I said, okay, I'm doing it as a print book. I said, you're going to see. It's going to sell about five copies because nobody's going to want this like that.
Where did your cover come from?
I told Sarah, though, I said, now, since you have harassed me to do this, I need a different cover for the book. I thought it was a cute little ebook cover, but I wanted something a little more Martha Stewart-y for the print book. So I said, since you've pushed me to do this, you're going to have to help me with the cover. So Sarah designed my book cover. So anyway, this whole plan backfired on me. Usually I don't like that, but to my delight this time, the book went to number one in Amazon, in its category for Amazon, and it's as outsold, I think. Well, it's still selling pretty well as an ebook, but it has shocked me how well it has sold.
Considering it's summer now and it's a Halloween book, so.
Yes. It's a Halloween book, and it's flying off the shelf, and it's a quite bit more expensive as a print book than it was as a little ebook. And like I said, I mean, it's still got images for every decoration and every recipe, but they're black and white. But apparently, Sarah might be right. People don't seem to care. So you have to think about that as all the possibilities of where you can put your book. So you might think it's a fiction book, and so maybe you should only do it as an ebook. But I have to say, I would look at all the possible avenues for sales. Would you say, Sarah?
Oh yes, in previous episodes, in fact, I've said, I can't see any reason for you not to do a print version of any ebook that you have, unless the book is just so short that it would make no sense to have print copies. I mean, there's at some point on Amazon, I think it's if your book is less than 140 pages, it won't let you do a spine on CreateSpace if you use their cover template thing or whatever. I can't really see any reason why you wouldn't do a print version of just about any book that you, because some people just want to have an actual book in hand, a proper real book with pages.
Okay, so that's the thing here now. So that's just number four on the list, is obviously be thinking about how you're going to, the formats for your book and how you're going to distribute it.
And we've talked before also about other things related to this, for instance, using IngramSpark and the various publishing or printing methods and publishing methods that you can go with. So we have an in-depth episode about that.
Yeah, I think that's called Indie Publishing Options. If they want to look up that title, Indie Publishing Options, and they can look that up on the archive of our website for our podcast or on the iTunes store. Sarah's going to give all that information at the end of the show. But that really was an in-depth discussion about the pros and cons and everything you can do with Ingram Spark and create space and all that other good stuff. So I definitely don't think we need to talk about that anymore. And distributors, that's a whole nother issue there, distributors. And it's really hard to get a distributor as a first-time author with one title. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you that. And even if you can find one, I'm not sure it's worth your while because there's a lot of cost associated with distribution. So I think you need to have some titles in your gallery there and some knowledge because you're going to learn a lot of things the hard way doing this. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to lose a lot of money in the process. And distribution, it's a complicated thing. So I would suggest that you kind of wade in before you jump in because you've got to buy all these books up front mm-hmm. that go to distribution and all that. So
that is if you get like a regular distributor outside of using the distribution channels through, for instance, Ingram Spark or CreateSpace.
Just
to clarify. Yeah.
Right. If you want to expand your distribution beyond Ingram or Amazon, and I do recommend that. I have distributors. I have several different distributors because the different publishers use different ones, and I've got a small distributor that just does some of my titles in the Carolinas. I've got big distributors that do them all over, but they get them in everywhere from catalog companies to school systems to airport gift shops to mm-hmm. Sarah will tell you she's seen them.
Terrence's book is everywhere because I live in a tourist area here on the coast, and her book, she writes so many like books that especially sort of focus on this area, whether it's having to do with Pirates of the Carolinas or ghosts, you know, the Carolina coast and little things like that. She's got a little book about coastal North Carolina. She's got books about lighthouses. You'll see her books everywhere, anywhere you go around here.
And that's what you want as a publisher.
That's
and author, right.
Right.
So, yeah. So don't get tunnel vision and get caught up thinking that Amazon is the only way or Ingram is the only mm-hmm. way, because the whole beauty now of having all these indie publishing options is that you're not stuck
yep.
into following this particular channel or protocol or whatever. And so I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket, and I do think that some distribution channels are better for some books than other books, for instance, and all. So just be sure and do your research and look into this and all that. Make sure, and especially with distributors, they're just like anything else in the world. There's some shady things. You don't want anybody that makes you pay a bunch of upfront costs and a bunch of warehouse fees and a bunch of setup fees. And I mean, you just got to be really careful what you're getting into mm-hmm. Because you do sign an agreement with them and you're giving them certain, you know. So just be careful about all that. Just know, like I said, the whole purpose, and I'm not going to tell you I'm an expert in this, just like I've stated earlier in the show, we're just trying to bring everything to your attention so that you know, don't learn all this stuff the hard way. You go into it with both eyes open. So to that end, the last thing I want to talk about is attitude. And Sarah can attest to this because I remind her all the time. She probably tells me, she's probably thinking inside her head, shut up.
I have no idea what you're going to say, I'm wondering what this is going
to
be about.
No. I'm saying probably when I say this to you, the first thought you is you're a broken record. I wish you quit saying that. Shut up. Because I do say this to Sarah a lot because I have to remind her because, like I said, she's very impatient and she wants everything up front and right away and she's not good at, you know, pacing herself. But you have to remember it's a marathon and not a sprint. Now, don't I say that to you, Sarah?
Yes, you do. Especially in particular, this is related to the fact that I've told her that my goals, oh, Lord willing, my goal is to release two books in my series every year. You know, I just released The Smuggler's Gambit in March, and I'm hoping to release Captured in the Caribbean in September, which is book two. And then I would hope to release the third book in the spring and then the fourth book next fall and like that. And she says, pace yourself. Just, you know.
I'm just afraid I don't want her to burn herself out. She's burning the candle at both ends. And I know a bit about this. I'm guilty of this too. And I've done this. I started out where I did two books in a year and I thought, yeah, okay, I think I can do three books next year. And you find it's a slippery slope. You keep upping your level, your game, your expectation
of
yourself.
Yes, let's talk about that, Terrence. Let's talk about that because yes, I'm burning the candle at both ends, but writing is not my only gig, I have to admit. I mean, as any of you who've listened to this show know, I also have a full-time job as a website developer and graphic designer, and I homeschool my son, who's 12. So yes, that's how I burn the candle at both ends. But Terrence is not fooling around when it comes to writing, and I just think it's so funny about her telling me to pace myself on how many books to come out within
Well,
a year.
because I know how this works. I've followed the same path, and Sarah and I have a lot of the same
How many
personality.
books,
Right?
Terrence? How many books are the most that you've released or are releasing in 1 year?
This year it's actually going to turn out. Oh, Sarah, I can't believe you've done this to me. It's
Well,
going to be six books.
six books in 1 year.
And that was, I backed into that, and I'm telling you, that's what happens, because if you write because you just have to write, and for me, I'm an idea person, you know that. And when I get an idea, it's hard for me to go, okay, put that on the back burner and come back to that when you have time or something. No, I'm trying to juggle all of it and fulfill all the ideas, and it just snowballs. And then you reach a point where I was kind of snippy. I'll tell you, I was Sarah tonight. I'm like, okay, this is the season finale of the show, and we need to get on with this. And I was kind of snippy with her because I'm like, I want to check something off my list now. This thing's dragged on. Let's do the show. We're not going to have any more time than we have last week or tomorrow or next week or whatever. It's just going to get worse. So I can attest to this, that it's just, I'm speaking out of my own experience, because I do know how easy it is to just, especially if you're trying to do it all. If you're trying to indie publish, and God help you, you've got to sometimes just take a step back and say, I'm in this for the long haul. I don't have to do all this today or tonight or tomorrow. It's not going anywhere. And so I just say, be careful with that, because some personalities may find it overwhelming and may end up, retreating. And back away, say, this is too much work, or this is too much pressure, or whatever. But you're your own boss, so it doesn't have to be like that. You know what I'm saying, Sarah?
Yeah, I do. But then we also get, those of us who are just starting out as independent author publishers, and especially if you're writing a series, you hear all the advice that says the best way to sell more books is to write more books. The best way to sell more books is to write more books. Don't
And
spend a
that
whole
is
lot of
true.
time mic marketing when you first come out with just one book, because nobody has anything to go to if they love it. So you feel this compulsion, like, oh my gosh, I've got to hurry up and get the next thing out there, like now.
But see, for me, my problem, I have a lot of series out there, as you know. So when I take time and I'm working on one book and one series, then the other series are dormant. And so then I feel a pressure, okay, you haven't released a title in this series in 16 months. You need to do this, because any following you had, they're losing interest, and so there's a lot of pressure once you get so many titles out there, that you feel like you've got to keep, to go like this. And then I think you've got to be careful, because then you find the very thing that I'm telling you've got to allow time to do is marketing. You've got to promote your book. And I've gotten really bad about that, because I'm like, there's just not enough time in a day to research a book, to write a book, to promote a book, to sell a book, to handle social media, to do this and that and all. And so I'm just saying, just be very careful in your mind about your attitude, and what you can do and what you should get done in a day and all that. And so my advice, for what it's worth, is just to be patient, be persistent, be ready, always be ready for opportunities. So things you don't know, like with my travel show right now, I don't know if you know this, Sarah, but I'm getting a lot of response from the people I've had on the show, where they're posting blogs and articles and little things and links, backlinks and all, to my show and my website and me and all, finally starting to get some real, connection from doing that. And so you've got to be aware of these opportunities and be sure that you're telling people, you can find me here, or did you check this out, or, hey, would you like to do an interview with me about this, or, you know what I'm saying? You need to build on any little thing that comes your way. So just kind of always be thinking of everything as, okay, what is this in the way of an opportunity for me to promote my book?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for me with social media, of course, because I don't see. It's a very indirect thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I tend to like, you know, me, I'm a cause and effect girl. So if I have to be able to see, okay, if I do this, then I'm going to get a book review, or I do this, I'm going to get an interview, or I do this, and I'm going to get maybe some hits on my site or whatever. But I have a really hard time with intangible stuff like social media. But
and, you know, I think one of the biggest things with the social media is, and it's I guess it goes back to the it's a marathon and not a sprint, is staying in front of people, and social media keeps them so that they remember you, so that as soon as you do have a new book come out, you have an audience there waiting, you know.
Yeah.
Not that they're waiting with bated breath, but they're there, and they know that you're not just popping up all of a sudden to just say, hey, I have a new book out. You know, you've sort of been interacting or doing something all along and, you know, keeping your social media presence active. And then when you have something new to come out, you announce it. It's just a natural thing to do. So.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like a parent saying, you know, do as I say, not as I do. So I'm telling you to kind of make your opportunities and be watchful for them, and just always think about what can I do. You've got to think like a publisher. What can I do to promote this book, this title? And for me, it's especially important because when people learn about one of my books, then they might discover I have other books that they didn't even know about that I wrote in a different genre, because, you know, I write so many different kinds of books and all that, that it's helpful. If they learn about one book, then maybe they'll learn about the other 26 I wrote, and then maybe they'll have an interest in some of those. And so you've got to keep that in mind. So I'm saying keep moving forward. Absolutely. I think it's wonderful. That's the smart thing for Sarah to do, is to be working on the second book in her series. You know, you've got to keep growing your business, you're growing your brand, you know, get your following. And I would say also to never give up. My big thing to people, you may have to turn your boat to catch the wind, but you need to just keep on sailing.
Yep.
Instead, because Sarah's sending her son to sailing camp next week. She said, I'll work that in.
Well, I did. That was very clever. You know what? There's one thing that I want to work in, and that is to say that there's another important thing about attitude that people should remember. And I don't know. I kind of have a gut feeling that you'll have a book that'll be coming out about this in the near future, about the fact that you need to keep the mindset of the fact that this is a business, and don't let yourself get bogged down with researching how to write books, how to write novels. You know, don't talk about it endlessly. Don't plan it endlessly. Don't even revise it endlessly. Just write it, get it done, and get it out there. And also, don't let all the siren call of all the different books about, you know, there's 10,000, you know, programs, webinars, you know, series. I mean, Terrence, you and I have talked about this. You know, people who are just as new to independent publishing as most of us who are listening. And Terrence is not new to the publishing industry, because she's been in it for a long time with traditional publishing, and, you know, she's dipped her toes into the pool of independent publishing. She knows enough about the industry, though. But there are so many people out there that are writing books and doing, you know, all kinds of little, I don't know, programs and courses and things that they're charging an arm and a leg for. So don't let that become a vacuum for your wallet, sucking out all of your dollars while you think it's going to, you know, help you sell books and publish books and write books, because ultimately the only thing that's going to make it happen is you putting your butt in the chair and getting it done.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Sarah knows I get crazy about all these people that are saying you can write a book in 24 hours, that you can write a bestseller after you listen to this webinar, or you buy this book design template, or whatever else. You go to our publishing.
What was the other one you said the other day? Something about how to write a book if you hate to write? Is this something like
that? Yeah. I mean, seriously, I've gotten really, really frustrated with this. And so I had told Sarah, I said, you know, there's so much bad advice being given by people who are claiming to be writing experts. And as somebody who's paid their dues, that's been in this business a long time, that knows what's reasonable and what's not, it's really made me nuts. So I told her, I guess she wasn't sure if I wanted to say this or not, but I told her, I said, I'm going to do a series of books about how to write, get published, and sell your book. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm working on now. And I'm very candid in it with people that if you think it's going to be this way, then you don't need to be doing it, because I'm here to give you the real lowdown.
That's right. And in fact, in the acknowledgments at the end of the Smuggler's Gambit, one of the things I thanked Terrence for was the reality checks that she often would give me as I was writing. And she, you know, at first she was a little bit, she was like, "Oh, I hope you don't mean that I was clipping your wings or anything." I said, "No, not at all." I said, "What you were doing is you were preparing me for all the hard work that I had ahead of me, because if you hadn't done that, then I might have gone in with delusions of grandeur thinking, oh, I'm going to release this book and I'm going to be a bestseller. I can, you know, if I might have been gullible and thought, for instance, that a lot of these things out there that will say, tell you how to sell your first 12,000 Kindle books in 24 hours or, you know, whatever all these other programs are that promise results. And really, I think probably the only person who's truly profiting from that is the person who puts it out there. I could have fallen for all that and I'd be broke and I wouldn't have had money to hire my copy editor. You know?
Yeah, because I wanted Sarah to go into it with her eyes open. I did not want to discourage you, and I don't think I did.
No, not
but
at all.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew realistically how it was going to work and everything. And I think that kept you from getting discouraged, because you said, "Well, I'm expecting this, so I'm not surprised I didn't sell 10,000 in the first hour,"
right?
Or whatever. And so I think that's an important thing. And when you hear all this stuff, this is another thing that really bothers me. When people tell you this is what you absolutely have to do, I think that if you've listened to our either both episode seasons of our show, mm-hmm. or any particular episode, even Sarah and I are very candid. We don't have all the answers,
right?
And anybody that tells you they do, be very leery about that, because this is like publishing, writing is like the stock market. If you really could guess it, we'd all be rich. We'd all be on Wall Street. You know, there's so many variables that happen, and what works for one book or one author or one publisher or whatever is not necessarily a cut and dry formula for everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you just have to go into it just knowing you're going to have to find what works for you. And so that's what we've tried to do, is just give you as much information as we can so that you are fully armed and ready to face all the challenges of writing and publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of other things we've already addressed this season. As Sarah talked, we talked about printing options, book formatting, book covers, mm-hmm. hybrid publishing. Gosh, so much stuff. I really think we have a really good
catalog of shows for this year.
Yeah, I really think it was a really good thing here. And so I urge you to go back and listen to some of these episodes, and Sarah's going to tell you about how to do that now. So I don't think I have anything else that I felt like I needed to share. I don't know about you, Sarah, but that's pretty much what I wanted to say about how to think like a publisher.
I'm just really excited. This is the season finale for our second season. I'm really grateful because we've had a lot of listeners. We've had a lot of new people who started listening this season. A ton of people are finding us from Twitter. These shows are getting retweeted a lot on Twitter. And that it's just great because so many people will send me messages and things, and I'm sure Terrence gets them too, thanking us for these shows because they feel like there's a lot of helpful information in them. And there might be some of you out there who might already know a lot of this because you've already gotten to the point where you've sort of figured some of this stuff out for yourself, but there are a lot of people who are just starting in the business of trying to write and publish their first novel and all of that. And we have the whole first season is all about the business of writing your book. And then the second season is all about publishing, and in future, in the future, any episodes we might do could be about marketing. There's so many things to talk about.
We were going to do it like special episodes, mm-hmm. special topics, weren't we?
As they come up and as we have things to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do know, I did want to mention that I do know from my, Sarah was saying from her feedback. The most listened to or most popular or whatever was the Point of View episode that we had. And for me, I think it was probably the traditional versus indie publishing episode where we did pros and cons of both. And so it's like I said, it's just a lot of different information presented. And I just think that if you're going into this, whether you're wanting to get traditionally published or indie published, a lot of the same information is useful to you and important, good information. So I do hope that you will take advantage of the fact that you can get it anytime on our websites or from iTunes.
That's right. That's right. And just as a reminder to everyone, yes, as Terrence said, you can find our entire backlist on iTunes. You could also find it on my website, which is sarahwhitford.com. That's sarahwhitford.com. Or Terrence's website, which is terrencezepke.com. That's terrencezepke.com. And I also want to mention, if you're traveling this summer, you definitely want to check out Terrence's travel site, because she has got a ton of tips, and she literally wrote the Encyclopedia of Cheap Travel. And that website is terrencetalkstravel.com. And
Sarah designed that for me, so it's a very good site.
Well,
but I did want to mention to people, when they go to iTunes, what do they do then? Do they search for a writer's journey?
You have to do a search for a writer's journey, and it will come up under podcast. It's a podcast, and then they can just click on that and subscribe to it. And then, you know, it'll automatically deliver episodes to your iPhone or your iTunes on your computer, and you'll be able to listen to new episodes whenever we have them. So, but of course, if you prefer, you can also just subscribe on either of our websites, and you'll get notified of any new articles we have, plus you'll be notified of new podcast episodes. So
I recommend that, because we do put text, which you won't get on iTunes. We do put some text and links and all on our sites, but also it'll let you know when there's going to be a new episode, because before we were doing it about every week. It's going to be done a little bit differently here in the future. So even if you want to listen to it on iTunes, if you subscribe to our sites, you'll at least know.
Here's
a new episode. I'll go to iTunes and check it out. But you won't know, because you don't want to keep checking iTunes. And so that would be my recommendation, is just to get subscribed. And then you would know when a new episode comes out, so whatever format you want to hear it on. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, really, with iTunes, if it's supposed to just automatically push it to your device when it comes out, but they still won't get the text. So anyway, that's it. People, Terrence is so busy writing books. She's not like super, super tech.
That's a nice way of putting it.
I think we've covered that enough in the episodes. This is not news to people. So in any case, but I still agree with her. I still think that the very best way to stay in the loop with the shows is to subscribe on either of our websites, because we do have show notes, and you're not going to be getting those with iTunes. So anyway.
And we are going to get some help when we talk about certain kinds of social media in this upcoming season, when we do special episodes and all. We're going to get some help for some stuff, because I'm just not an expert on some of these different forums, unless Sarah can carry the show. I know a good bit about Facebook and Twitter and all, but some of the other ones I think I would have to get some help on, don't you think, Sarah?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things we help each other on, because there's plenty of things that you know about that you've been able to give me advice on. And when it comes to anything tech related, yeah, I got you covered.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. So I guess that's it for the season finale.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for joining us, and until next time, keep writing.